"My captain, you must have ere this perceived, respected sir," said the imperturbable, godly-looking Bunger, slightly bowing to Ahab, "is apt to be facetious at times. He spins us many clever things of that sort. But I may as well say, en passant, as the French remark, that I myself, that is to say Jack Bunger, late of the Reverend Clergy, am a strict total abstinence man. I never drink water!" cried the captain. "He never drinks it. It's a sort of fits to him. Fresh water throws him into the hydrophobia. But go on with the arm story."
"Yes, I may as well," said the surgeon coolly. "I was about observing, sir, before Captain Boomer's facetious interruption, that spite of my best and severest endeavours, the wound kept getting worse and worse. The truth was, sir, it was as ugly, gaping wound as surgeon ever saw. More than 2 feet and several inches long. I measured it with the lead line. In short, it grew black. I knew it was threatened, and off it came. But I had no hand in shipping that ivory arm there. That thing is against all rule," pointing at it with a marling spike. "That is the captain's work, not mine. He ordered the carpenter to make it. He had that club hammer there put to the end to knock someone's brains out with, I suppose. As he tried mine once, he flies into diabolical passions sometimes. Do you see this dent, sir?" removing his hat and brushing aside his hair, and exposing a bowl-like cavity in his skull, but which bore not the slightest scarry trace or any token of ever having been a wound. "Well, the captain there will tell you how that came here. He knows."
"No, I don't," said the captain. "But his mother did. He was born with it. Oh, you solemn rogue, you Bunger. Was there ever such another Bunger in the watery world? Bunger, when you die, you ought to die in pickle, you dog. You should be preserved to future ages, you rascal." "What became of the white whale?" now cried Ahab, who thus far had been impatiently listening to this byplay between the two Englishmen. "Oh," cried the one-armed captain. "Oh, yes, well, after he sounded, we didn't see him again for some time. In fact, as I before hinted, I didn't then know what whale it was that had served me such a trick till some time afterwards, when coming back to the line we heard about Moby Dick, as some call him, and then I knew it was he. Didst thou cross his wake again?" "Twice. But could not fasten? Didn't want to try to. Ain't one limb enough? What should I do without this other arm? And I'm thinking Moby Dick doesn't bite so much as he swallows."
"Well then," interrupted Bunger, "give him your left arm for bait to get the right. Do you know, gentlemen," very gravely and mathematically bowing to each captain in succession, "do you know, gentlemen, that the digestive organs of the whale are so inscrutably constructed by divine providence that it is quite impossible for him to completely digest even a man's arm? And he knows it, too. So that what you take for the white whale's malice is only his awkwardness. For he never means to swallow a single limb. He only thinks to terrify by feints. But sometimes he is like the old juggling fellow, formerly a patient of mine in Ceylon, that making believe swallow jackknives once upon a time let one drop into him in good earnest, and there it stayed for a 12-month or more. When I gave him an emetic, and he heaved it up in small tacks, you see. No possible way for him to digest that jackknife, and fully incorporate it into his general bodily system. Yes, Captain Boomer, if you are quick enough about it and have a mind to pawn one arm for the sake of the privilege of giving decent burial to the other, why, in that case, the arm is yours. Only let the whale have another chance at you shortly, that's all."
"No, thank you, Bunger," said the English captain. "He's welcome to the arm he has, since I can't help it and didn't know him then, but not to another one. No more white whales for me. I've lowered for him once, and that has satisfied me. There would be great glory in killing him, I know that. And there is a shipload of precious sperm in him, but okay, he's best let alone. Don't you think so, Captain?" glancing at the ivory leg. "He is, but he will still be hunted for all that. What is best let alone, that accursed thing is not always what least allures. He's all a magnet. How long since thou sawest him last? Which way heading?"
"Bless my soul, and curse the foul fiends," cried Bunger, stoopingly walking round Ahab, and like a dog strangely snuffing. "This man's blood, bring the thermometer, is at the boiling point. His pulse makes these planks beat. Sir," taking a lancet from his pocket and drawing near to Ahab's arm.
"Avast!" roared Ahab, dashing him against the bulwarks. "Man the boat, which way heading?"
"Good God!" cried the English captain, to whom the question was put. "What's the matter? He was heading east, I think. Is your captain crazy?" whispering Fadala.
But Fadala, putting a finger on his lip, slid over the bulwarks to take the boat's steering oar, and Ahab, swinging the cutting tackle towards him, commanded the ship's sailors to stand by to lower. In a moment he was standing in the boat's stern, and the Manila men were springing to their oars. In vain the English captain hailed him. With back to the stranger ship and face set like a flint to his own, Ahab stood upright till alongside of the Pequod.